Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. The Chesapeake and Ohio Railway, serving the lifeline of American industry from the Great Lakes to the sea, presents Information, Please. Good evening, everyone. Here are the rules for playing Information, Please. If we use your question, Information, Please will send you the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If the question is muff, you get, in addition, a $50 savings bond and 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We may edit your questions a bit, and in case of similarity, we'll be the judges of whose question shall be used. All questions remain our property. Send questions and correct answers to Information, Please, Mutual Broadcasting System, New York, 18, New York. Information, Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenthal. And now our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This evening, two members of our quartet of experts are our regulars, Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran, editor of the best-selling Information, Please almanac. The other two, whom we are most proud to welcome tonight, are the world's greatest Wagnerian singers, Miss Helen Traubel and Mr. Lauritz Melchior. Now, we're going to begin with a question from Victor Baden of New York and get two out of the three questions on this one. I will name a large dog, and you are to give me the name of a much smaller dog of the same type. Is that clear? I don't know how much smaller it has to be, but it need be smaller. But the large dog is an Irish setter. What's a smaller dog of the same type as the Irish setter? I presume that means similar breed, Miss Traubel?
Would that be a Cocker Spaniel?
Well, it would be. Is that the same as a King Charles Spaniel?
No. King Charles was a little smaller, but the Cocker Spaniel was a much smaller spaniel and setter than the of that breed than
Miss Traubel
Irish setter.
That's correct, yes.
Any spaniel.
Very good. Any spaniel, King Charles.
Well, the Clumber Spaniel is pretty nearly as big as a setter.
What kind?
Clumber.
Clumber?
C-L-U-M-B-E-R.
This is all new to me. How about this one? The foxhound is a large dog. Can you name a smaller one of the same sort as a foxhound? Mr. Kieran.
Beagle.
A beagle, yes. Small foxhound. And a mastiff is a large one. What is a small one of the same kind as a mastiff? Mr. Kieran, I never knew you were a dog fancier.
Well, a boxer is on the same order, and let's see, a Boston Terrier might be. Well, that's a terrier. That wouldn't
that
really...
wouldn't be the same as a mastiff, would
no.
it?
I'd say a boxer.
What would you say, Miss Traubel?
Boxer.
A boxer would be right. I don't have a boxer down here. I have a pug dog. Would it be about the same?
Practically
the same. Supposed to be of mastiff origin. All right. Try this one from Mrs. Jess F. Chambers of Uniontown, Pennsylvania. Can you identify these hallucinations or delusions or visions that appear in literature? A little girl who thought she was being warmed by a fire when she was really freezing. Mr. Melchior.
The Little Match Girl from Hans Christian Andersen.
That is right, yes. The story of Hans Christian Andersen that we all read in school. How about this one? A man who thought he was an elephant. A man who thought he was an elephant. That kind of horror. This was during his sober moments, too, just to make it even harder. Remember it, Mr. Kieran? Well, it's from a poem by Lewis Carroll. He thought he saw an elephant that practiced on a fight.
Sylvie and Bruno.
I think it is from that. He looked again and found it was a letter from his wife. Makes just as much sense as a good many things that are said on this program. A king who thought he was wearing a handsome new outfit, but who really had nothing on. Can you identify that one?
That's again Hans Christian Andersen.
That's quite right. What's the story, Mr. Melchior?
That is the Kaiser's new clothes.
Kaiser, or Emperor, if you want to be a little... the Emperor's new clothes.
The Kaiser, in Danish, you say Kaiser. Kaiser's new clothes.
Very good. I'll take it. That gives us two out of three, and sends us on to this one from Eugene Lieberman of Newark, New Jersey. That's a very interesting question, and I think probably Miss Traubel and Mr. Melchior will have the advantage of Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams. I want you to identify the music and the singers from these recordings. We're going to play three different recordings. We have to get two out of three. Tell us what is being played, or rather being sung, and who are the singers? Let's have the first. I want to listen.
Thank you.
That you don't believe.
Well, Miss Trouble?
Florence Foster Jenkins.
Oh, now, that's a name that's unfamiliar to me, Miss Trouble. Can you explain? First place, can you explain that singing in general?
No.
Can you tell us what was being sung?
Oh.
Yes. Lakme.
Lakme, yes. Yeah. The bell
the
song.
Bell song. All right. Not so much belly, but...
Miss Trouble, would you say that voice was trained?
No.
Oh, gee.
Did you call it a voice?
Well, I don't know. And that is Miss Florence Foster Jenkins rendering the bell song from Lakme. And now...
Murdering.
I'm afraid that's libelous. Now, who is singing in the next recording? And what's being sung? Miss Trouble, you think you know this?
Well, it's supposed to be Lawrence Matthew and Helen Trouble.
You think it is?
But who is actually singing?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised what we sound like that sometimes.
No.
A magnificent imitation by Alec Temple.
Oh, that's quite right. And he's doing both parts, of course.
Yes, he
and
is.
What is he singing? What's the passage from?
Versa Versa, which my...
It's from Lohengrin.
I thought it was, isn't it, from the Valkyrie?
No, I think it's a combination
of both.
I think it is.
He's done very cleverly.
Well, it is Mr. Alec Templeton doing two of his famous imitations. And now the next one and the last. I'll try, Mr. Melchior.
I like the soprano. It was a lousy tenor.
Well, I love the tenor.
Ah, well, that's very nice. Well, now, just to not to confuse our audience, tell us exactly who was singing and what was being sung. Mr. Melchior?
I suppose it was Tristan and Isolde, the law duet. I'm not quite sure.
That's right.
I'm quite sure.
That's in the second act. And the singers, of course, were...
Melchior and Trouble.
Yes. Now, have you sung that together, Miss Trouble and Miss Melchior, ever?
Well, we tried to. We're not always together.
With or without rehearsal.
Well, now, you know, it will interest Miss Trouble and Mr. Melchior and our audience, too, to know that that is a very odd record. That is not a record of you two singing together, but as a dubbed record, as we say, made up from two other records, in which Mr. Melchior sang with another soprano and Miss Trouble sang with another tenor.
Yes.
We've taken out the one tenor and the other soprano and put you two together, and whom God has put together and so forth.
But the other one is with the record I make with Frieda Lyra.
That I think is correct. Yeah. And I don't know about the one in which Miss Trouble sings. But at any rate, you've recognized yourselves beautifully, which is generally more than... Some of the actors on this program do. They never can recognize themselves. Try this one from Mrs. Nancy Kellner of Los Angeles. And let's get all on this. Oh, a very simple question. Explain the difference between hors d'oeuvre, antipasto, and smorgasbord. I'll start with Mr. Adams.
One is French, the other Italian, and the... What's the other one? And the other is
smorgasbord.
Swedish.
Oh, that is one difference.
All the same thing in the form of so-called appetizers.
You say they're all the same thing. Now, you have distinguished that.
I mean, they're all the same, have the same goal.
What's the goal, soup?
Make you a little more hungry.
Now let's see. Mr. Adams, of course, is absolutely right. Now, let's see if we can make some sort of difference, though, among hors d'oeuvre, antipasto, and smorgasbord. Mr. Melchior.
Yes, I'm insulted because he said it was Swedish and I'm a Dane and we eat it where I come from.
Why? All right, Scandinavian.
There you are.
All right, let's include the Scandinavian. And do you see, is there any difference between these three kinds of appetizers? Mr. Melchior.
The one is a lot. The Scandinavian smorgasbord is so much that you don't know what you shall start with and what you shall end with. And the other ones are only one thing, I think.
Hors d'oeuvre or antipasto?
Antipasto is one thing.
Oh,
hors d'oeuvre is other things, aren't they?
Now you're being a little unfair to the entire dish. Mr. Traubel, Mr. Melchior, from his girth, has obviously eaten these, perhaps more assiduously than any of the others. Mr. Kieran, do you know how antipasto would differ from smorgasbord?
Well, smorgasbord has a lot more fish food in there, I think, than antipasto
right.
has, and I think
right.
the French, the hors d'oeuvre, are just about in between there.
What would you say?
Smorgasbord, the real thing, the others only samples.
Well, the French and the Italians may not think so, but I think Mr. Kieran's distinction was a good one. There are a lot of fish in the smorgasbord, pickled eels, and also Scandinavian cheeses. Very good, too, particularly that one that tastes just like chocolate. And then the antipasto is usually served on a plate and has Italian specialties such as, what would you say, Mr. Kieran?
Well, they have sardines, and they have finocchio, and they have...
garlic.
Yes,
garlic.
Have olives and celery that tastes like licorice. And a few more things like that.
Yeah.
Red pepper.
That's right. And the hors d'oeuvre has cold meats and fish and vegetables, most of which are pickled or smoked. All right. I know you look very hungry, Mr. Melchior. You have to wait until we get out of here. It'll only be about 17 or 18 minutes. And now suppose we listen to a message from your announcer.
For a number of weeks, we have been talking on this program about the advantages to the public of an association of the Chesapeake and Ohio with the New York Central Railroad. We have told you, too, that permission for the C&O, as the largest single holder of New York Central stock, to be represented on the Central's board of directors, is now before the Interstate Commerce Commission for approval. Up to now, this permission has not been granted. Yet, in another and almost identical situation, exactly the same kind of arrangement has long been approved for two other railroads that are direct competitors of the C&O and the Central. Three men do serve as directors of both the Norfolk and Western Railroad and the Pennsylvania Railroad. This setup has worked to the advantage of both. Why, then, doesn't the Interstate Commerce Commission approve the present proposal, which it has had since April 1947, and permit two men to serve as directors of both the C&O and the New York Central? I'll be back later with more facts about this unusual situation. Meanwhile, back to information, please.
Try this one now from L.D. Goldwater of White Plains, New York, and let's get all on this. This, again, is going to be a little easier for our guests than for our regulars. You are asked to sing a line from each of the following that Mr. Kahn is going to play for us, which tells where or when these flowers bloomed. In other words, there are flowers involved in these songs. Where or when did they bloom? And sing the line which tells us that. Mr. Kahn, the first. Mr. Adams.
In the spring.
Yes, but you have
How
to
long?
Sing it. That
you
is
have
correct.
Nothing to do with the case.
Nothing to do with the case, no. I couldn't get a stave or two of melody out of you, Mr. Adams, if I chucked you under the chin.
I wouldn't compete with my rival.
Mr. Kieran, you feeling the...
I'm no better singer than Mr. Adams is.
We may offer you a scholarship.
Well, Mr. Kieran, you were doing beautifully.
Paula, have nothing to do with the case.
That's very good. A little help there for Mr.
I'm about to take under my wing.
Paula,
the most unattractive old thing. Paula. With a caricature of a face.
I'm very grateful to all three or four or five of you. And, yes, it's the flowers that bloom in the spring. And now the second selection, Mr. Kahn. Miss Trouble.
Röslein auf der Heide.
Now, will you translate for us and sing from it and tell us what the Röslein is and where it blooms?
Knoblein, Röslein, the thing.
Mr. Kieran?
I just said the words. I let Miss Trouble sing.
Miss Trouble, could you sing them for us?
Sein Knaben Röslein stehen, Röslein auf der Heide.
Is that all you like to give us? That's beautiful. And of course, the Röslein is a...
A roselet.
Yes,
a little rose.
And where is it blooming, Mr. Adams or Miss Trouble? Where is it?
On the heath.
On the heath and the field. And now the third and last, Mr. Kahn. I'll take a quartet on this if I have to. Miss Trouble, do you want to start Adams off? You say no. Well, you may be right. Mr. Adams?
What's that? Might be Sweet Adeline.
Sweet Adeline, certainly.
And where is the flower, and what flower is involved here?
An old parties where four men come together can sing.
You think so?
Yeah.
What flower?
Yes, you're the flower.
She's the flower of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet Adeline.
Yes, I've got to have a little melody.
She's the flower...
Wait, stay on his case.
Let Mr. Kahn help you out.
Oh, my heart, sweet
I do congratulate all four of you on being in voice this evening. Hazel Hume of Albuquerque, New Mexico, sends this one in. Can you name these people? Get two out of three. This person fell 25 feet, but nevertheless finished a performance of Siegfried. Who was that?
Oh, that Mr. was...
Not sure?
That was a tenor. His name was...
Remember everything about him.
Something with T.
Something with T.
Tauscher.
Very good. And where did this happen, this extraordinary accident?
Well, it's what we are afraid of happening every evening, but it happened for him once in the Metropolitan, in Siegfried, in the third act, where he has to go to the Brünnhilde's rock. And then he got the wrong way, got down in the cellar instead of got up on the rock.
Say, I had no idea that your profession was so dangerous.
Well,
we have new scenery,
that's why we got the new scenery. I paid $5,000 because I want to die a natural death.
Really powerful stuff, this singing. Now, here is another man who passed through a somewhat similar experience. He made a speech after he was shot. Made a speech after he was shot. Who was that? Mr. Adams.
Theodore Roosevelt.
That's quite right. And where did this happen?
Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee in 1912. And who successfully concealed a lame arm that had handicapped his throwing for a whole season? Who kept it hidden so that people didn't know about it for a while at any rate? Mr. Adams again.
Hank Greenberg.
Think not. Maybe.
Well, he did.
He did? Well, I don't have the information.
Well, every pitcher, or about half the pitchers, always turn up with a bad arm. One of the Coopers had his arm operated on.
Mm-hmm.
Mort Cooper.
Well, did he conceal the fact that his arm was lame during the season?
Matter of fact, Greenberg did during a World Series.
It may have been during the World Series, but how about during the whole season, or at least large
part? That I don't know.
I think it was Joe DiMaggio during the 1947 season. That's what I have down here. Maybe you're all wrong. Mr. Melchior, didn't you have a broken toe at one time?
Yes.
How did you happen to get that broken toe? I always want to know.
The toe stayed up and I fell down.
And during, were you singing at the time?
Yes, and I sang on the way down, too.
Your lower register must have been wonderful. What were you singing at that time?
Wagner.
You were.
Yeah. But it was in the old scenery.
That dangerous scenery, eh?
Yeah.
Try this one from Henry Fowle of New Rochelle, New York. Get 2 out of 3. Can you name a work in which no one has the heart to shoot an ailing horse? It's a novel, I think. No one has the heart to shoot an ailing horse. It's a book of a few years ago. Mr. Kieran.
The only one I know. How about Black Beauty?
I think not. My memory may be at fault. Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams.
I think that might be Whitey, who was a horse in Penrod.
Are you just making that up?
No.
Of course, you may be absolutely
Tarkington right. Made it up.
Oh, I know there's a horse in Penrod, but I don't think the episode of no one having the heart to shoot him is in Penrod. The one I was thinking of, largely because I happen to have it typed out here on the card, is My Friend Flicker by Mary O'Hara. Remember, in the end, the horse recovers, I'm very glad to announce to our large audience. A boy runs away from home because he has to shoot his fawn. Where do you find that episode? Mr. Straubel?
The Yearling.
In The Yearling, yes. Beautiful novel by Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings. What happens in the book? Is the fawn shot?
Yes, the fawn is eventually shot.
And in the movie, what happens?
It's shot.
No, heavens, not in the movie. Wouldn't have anything unhappy.
I thought you were given to believe that it is shot. Yeah. I came away from
the... Oh, yes, it's shot, but it doesn't die. It doesn't die. Nobody dies in the movie. Oh.
They do in opera.
Yes, that's one of the nice things about opera.
We're still alive a little.
With that new scenery. How about a novel in which a crisis is precipitated by the shooting of a mule? Shooting of a mule precipitates a good deal of the plot. Mr. Adams.
Might be a bell for Adana.
Oh, it is. It is. Don't be coy, Mr. Adams.
I never saw it. I never saw it. I don't know.
That's very good. Yes, it's John Hersey's famous and very beautiful novel, A Bell for Adana. And that gives us 2 out of 3.
It's a donkey, not a mule.
Oh, I beg your pardon. And that makes a great deal of difference to a donkey, I understand. That gives us 2 out of 3. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here again is your announcer.
I was telling you earlier about an unusual situation. 3 individuals serve as directors of both the Norfolk and Western and the Pennsylvania. 2 other individuals have not yet been permitted to serve as directors of both the Chesapeake and Ohio and the New York Central. Nevertheless, the 2 cases are strikingly parallel. The Norfolk and Western, like the C&O, is primarily a great coal hauling road. Both get much of their freight tonnage and revenue from the rich coal fields of the Appalachian region. The Pennsylvania, like the New York Central, serves great industrial centers, delivering to those areas enormous tonnages of coal which originate on other roads. The C&O is a natural teammate of the Central, as the N&W naturally works hand in glove with the Pennsylvania. Why shouldn't the C&O and the Central be granted the same advantages that are permitted to our direct competitors, the 2 other railroads? We believe they should, and that the association would promote increased efficiency and service to the public. Now back to information, please. Try this one, Miss Traubel and gentlemen, from Alex Strachan of Brookline, Massachusetts, and get all on this. This, again, is a musical question. Each of these musical selections that Mr. Kahn is going to play for us suggests initiation rites into some order or group of people. You have to name the order or group in each case. There's an initiation that's involved in this music. Mr. Kahn? I have Miss Traubel and Mr. Melchior's hand. Which shall I take?
Ladies first.
Ladies first. I will defer. Mr. Melchior, go ahead.
Well, it is Parsifal, Wagner's Parsifal.
Yes.
And it is the entrance of the knight into the Grail's temple.
Yes, he's being acclaimed after he's saved Amfortas, isn't that right? What act does all this take place?
Well, they are marching in the first act, and they're marching in the last act also, and then they're marching home.
Oh, what a lot of action there is. That's very fine. I wonder how Wagner thought of all that variety. How about the second one, Mr. Cullen? Mr. Melchior? Mr. Melchior, what is the... Do you recognize the music?
Yes, that's Mozart's Zauberflöte.
Yes,
that
magic
is
flute.
Sort of Freemasonry goes through that whole opera.
Yes.
And he's getting into the temple there in Diesen Heiligen Hallen.
That's the one. Tamino is put through a series of tests or ordeals.
Yes.
Reminiscent of the...
Mozart was a great Freemason.
Great Freemason of the time.
There written a lot of Freemason music, and that whole Zauberflöte is all based on Masonic work.
That is correct, yes. And now let's see if we can do it, Mr. Adams.
That's the best tune they've had all night.
Well, it's Mozart, you know.
Wait until the Wagner comes along.
I can wait.
I should warn you, Mr. Melchior, that we are not, on the whole, a Wagner-crazy crew here, you know.
I am.
You are, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, that's nice. But Mr. Adams and I...
One customer.
That's three against two.
He generally gets in on a pass, though, Mr. Melchior.
No, I pay my way.
You pay your way?
Sorry.
I think we should offer him a scholarship in singing.
No, we need him on this show, Mr. Melchior. Now, Mr. Kahn, let us have the third and last bit of initiation music. That is not Wagner. I'll help you out. Although it's easier to sing. No luck? Indian, very good, Mr.
I'm an Indian brave or something. I'm an Indian squaw brave.
That's good. Well, that's all the difference.
Yeah. Oh, another Indian.
Something you said has tickled Miss Traubel over here. Now, what's it from? You're right, Mr. Kieran.
It's from one of the shows.
Yes, which one?
Oh, is that Annie Gets Your Gun?
That's right,
Miss Traubel.
Yes, from Annie Gets Your Gun. Annie is being adopted into the tribe.
That's right.
Sue Indian.
Ethel Merman. Yes.
That's right. Now, let's see if we can try this one from Mrs. Evelyn Spindler of Chicago. Get all. What city is suggested by bookstalls on the banks of a river? Mr. Kieran.
Paris.
Or Paris, for the sake of, your master of ceremonies. And what is the river involved?
The Seine. And it's on the left bank.
Good enough. What city is suggested by an opera house in an office building? What city would be suggested by that? An opera house in an office building facing a river. Which seems an odd place for Mr. Adams.
Chicago.
Oh, absolutely right. What opera house is it?
The Civic Opera.
The Civic Opera House.
Facing the Chicago River.
Yes, that's quite right. Mr. Melchior, have you ever sung in the Civic Opera House in Chicago?
Yes.
You just didn't notice that you were in an office building?
Well,
at the
you
time?
Didn't notice it's an opera house at all when you go outside it anyway.
It doesn't look like
no.
it. How about a city that's suggested by stores on a bridge across a river? Stores on the bridge across the river. What city, Mr. Kieran?
Well, how about Venice?
I'm not sure about Venice. So much as Florence, which is on the Ponte Vecchio. Well, that gives us only two out of three, and sends $50 to Mrs. Spindler and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and I see our time's almost up. But first, here's a word about the 1948 Information Please Almanac.
What is the family's most useful book? The Bible, number one. The cookbook, number two. We believe the Information Please Almanac is number three. Now, don't groan. That's our opinion. Why? It's interesting and informative reading for everyone at home. It's helpful in schoolwork for all students. Useful in your job and business. Go to the stores tomorrow. Check the Information Please Almanac. If you agree with us, buy it for $2. If you don't, send us a nasty letter.
Tonight, Information Please has paid out one $50 United States Savings Bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Helen Traubel. Thank you, Lawrence Melchior, for joining us this evening. Watch your paper for the names of next week's guests. And now, good night, everybody.
This is Joe Jackson speaking for the Chesapeake and Ohio Railway, inviting you to be with us again next week when we present Information Please. This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the world's largest network serving more than 450 radio stations, the Mutual Broadcasting System.